podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. On Perpetual Chess, I have weekly conversations with the chess world's best players, promoters, and educators about their lives, careers, current projects, and best practices. Perpetual Chess is brought to you through the generosity of its Patreon and PayPal supporters. For more information, go to perpetualchesspod.com. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to Perpetual Chess. We have another guest that I am excited for this weekend. But first off, I just wanted to give you guys a quick notice. For those of you who may have had some trouble with the audio quality of my interview with Lev Albert, if you didn't catch the announcement on the Perpetual Chess Facebook group, if you didn't follow me on Twitter, just wanted to let you guys know that we have a transcript of that interview now available. So there's a lot of historical nuggets there. Lev obviously had so much knowledge to share. So if you had any trouble with that, you can either go to the webpage of the Lev Albert interview, or you can even just go on Apple Podcasts or your podcast platform to that show description, and there's a link to the transcript. So if you couldn't figure out what we were saying, hopefully now you can read it and enjoy that interview. So with that out of the way, I wanted to get to this week's guest with whom I am also excited to speak. He is the co-founder of a chess educational startup that I know a lot of listeners are quite familiar with and are fans with, called Chessable. He's also a video game designer. He is a chess player and an adult improver himself. Born in Russia, lives in London, joining us from London, David Cramley. Thank you for coming on Perpetual Chess.
Hi, Ben. Yes, thanks so much for inviting me, for having me. I'm excited as well. Been listening to a few of your podcasts. It's great stuff. So thanks for doing this.
Thanks. I appreciate it. And people who listen to this show regularly will probably know that this is one I'm especially excited for. First of all, as I've mentioned in the past, I'm a big fan of the product Chessable. I think it's the best thing out there for, best learning tool out there for helping people memorize things they need to memorize as improving chess players, whether it be openings or, specific tactics and sequences and stuff like that. And also just the intersection of the things that you're working on. I mean, I love chess, and of course I'm interested in all aspects of chess, but business in particular, and sort of how to grow a business as you in the chess world, is something of particular interest to me. So I'm eager to hear your story. So of course I've been digging in a bit and know some about your background, but I think for our listeners it's best to hear it from you yourself. So why don't you tell us about how the idea for Chessable? Well, why don't you first explain briefly what Chessable does?
Cool. Yeah. Okay. So with Chessable, we started with helping you memorize and understand opening lines. So it was born out of a frustration of just not remembering your openings. But obviously, where we got the openings from were some print opening books. So we kind of thought about what the next step would be, and it would be to expand it to all kinds of books. So today, Chessable can help you memorize and again, understand the contents of any type of book. It could be endgame, tactics, strategy. And the way it does this is by using learning science, in particular spaced repetition, which makes sure that you review the concepts at particular intervals of time that get longer and longer as you go along, until you eventually have to review things maybe like once every 3 months or something. So it gets really good at kind of figuring out what you should review tomorrow and what you can leave for next week, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and for listeners who may have heard my interview with cognitive science Christopher Chabri, he mentioned spaced repetition as sort of being at the vanguard of cognitive science research. So the fact that we have this entrant into the chess educational landscape is a wonderful thing, and it's very user friendly. I recently played a tournament for the first time in many months, and I would prefer to avoid talking about the results of that tournament, but it wasn't Chessable's fault. It did an awesome job, and I was able to upload some repertoires and really dig in, and my openings actually went quite well in no small part thanks to Chessable. So I'm not not a paid representative, but just want to say it's an awesome product. And if anyone hasn't checked it out, I encourage you to. And in digging into your background, it was funny that you mentioned that you started Chessable basically to solve your own problem, that you were aware of the research regarding spaced repetition, but couldn't find anything on the market that helped you review books.
That's right. Yeah. So I had been watching opening videos, trying to read a couple of opening books. And then when the time came to play, I just couldn't remember a thing, you know, and I'm usually quite decent at learning things, you know, so I realized that chess is this particularly difficult subject, so probably up there with like physics or something, where sometimes due to the transpositions and the move orders, you really need to review things. And yeah, I was aware of spaced repetition based on my language learning, actually. So I thought, well, this should exist for chess. And I looked at a few things that were out there and not quite kind of like fit the bill. So, you know, I had just finished working on my previous startup. I had some spare time. So I spent a few days just coding a basic prototype of this and using it myself.
What languages do you speak, David?
So I speak English, Spanish, Russian, Portuguese on intermediate level, and probably beginner German.
Wow, that's impressive. And yeah, so you came up with the idea for Chessable, and then you said you spent a few days coding, and I know that you've written online, you've done some interviews and written some posts about your previous experience with a startup. So why don't you just give our listeners a brief background about that and how that sort of frames your experience for Chessable?
So I finished my undergrad in 2008 at Queens College in New York. And back then, I think Facebook was just up and coming, and they were kind of putting out calls for developers to join the platform and develop apps. And, you know, I was a keen gamer, played lots of video games in my time. And I thought, well, what should I do? It's my last year at uni. Let's try and make a few games for Facebook. And yeah, so that's how it all kicked off. I wrote a couple games. You know, some took me a weekend, some took me a week, some took me 2 weeks. And a couple of them took off, and people really enjoyed them. We built a community around it. And that growth just kept going until, yeah, we had enough money to hire people and try and build into a company. But I mean, I don't know how much detail you want to know in this, but eventually things changed in that area. It got really competitive the more Facebook grew. And I mean, Facebook's huge nowadays. So yeah, quite a few lessons to take away from that. And I'm trying to make sure that I implement them while building Chessable, and so as to have the best chances of building a great product without falling into the same pitfalls.
So what were a few of the pitfalls?
So a big one was, I guess, marketing, in the sense that, yeah, back when you're younger, you might hear this as a programmer that if you build it, they'll come. You know, if it's good enough, they'll come. And it's really not true. You do need marketing. but when Facebook was kind of young, they took all the marketing onto themselves. So they gave you all these cool tools that you could use to tap into their marketing. And that worked for us, and that's how we grew. But eventually Facebook withdrew the support under you with the marketing, and they said, well, now we want you guys to use our paid marketing platform, right? And you better have been collecting your users' emails and, you know, emailing them yourself, because now you can't use our notification system, that kind of thing. So as long as Facebook withdrew their support with marketing, our traffic kind of collapsed, and we didn't really have a mailing list. We didn't really have that kind of marketing relationship with our customers, and it kind of all fell apart like a house of cards.
Wow, that's a bad break. I mean, I certainly there are lessons you can learn from that, but it, yeah, you know, didn't have to shake out that way either. They didn't have to pull the rug out from under you.
It didn't, but I think it is an important lesson, because if we had our own marketing efforts, you know, alongside theirs, then even if they stopped doing their bit, we could have still survived, as many other companies did. You know, there were several well-funded Silicon Valley-based social game companies that were doing just that. So they were fine.
Right. And you mentioned in an interview I read that you, when you did launch Chessable, you got like 5,000 email addresses right away. So
that's right. Yeah.
So how were you able to do that? I mean, so how, what was the practical implication of what you learned from your experience with the video game startup and how you changed it when Chessable launched?
So I really wanted a co-founder that would complement my skill set. And I think marketing was one point there. And the other one would be to be a good chess teacher, a good chess coach, a good chess player, which, you know, I'm not.
For listeners, you're about 1800 FIDE, right?
Yeah, 1850. Yeah.
So you're being a bit modest. You're firmly above average.
Yeah, but you know, comparing myself to all these amazing players out there, like my co-founder John Bartholomew, I'm way below that. So in that light,
yeah, watching John's videos is a humbling experience for me too.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was like that lesson put to practice straight away. I basically said, I am not doing this unless I find a co-founder who will complement my skills, who will bring some marketing on board, who will know about chess in places that I don't. And I mean, for example, 100 Endgames You Must Know was a book that John recommended that we bring onto the site. And it was a great recommendation. You know, he knows that kind of stuff inside out. So that lesson was put into practice straight away in finding a co-founder, really.
And it was an excellent choice. I mean, obviously, you kind of caught a rising star. I mean, he already had a big YouTube following at the time, but it's only gotten bigger since then.
Yeah, I mean, when I watch his videos, I think he had about 3,000 followers. So I definitely caught a rising star. And I really enjoyed watching his videos. I enjoyed his teaching style, and it's been awesome.
And so you sent an email to John without even knowing him. And you guys ended up corresponding. I'm just sort of synthesizing what I've learned in
That's
my research. And then how did it go once you did talk to him? Was he just immediately on board, or did it take some convincing?
I think it would take some convincing for anyone. I mean, it's just, you know, this random person telling you about their great chess idea. You have to convince anyone, right? It was a very short email at first saying, you know, I've got this idea, one line about my background. Do you want to hear more? And, you know, you have to be careful with cold emails. You don't want to annoy people when they don't know you yet. So, I was just testing the waters. He said, sure, I would love to hear more about it. So then second email, he knew a bit more about it, and then he liked it. And then we scheduled a Skype call. And then after the Skype call, we scheduled a meeting in person, which coincidentally was working out well because he was due to travel to London in a few weeks or something. It was just taking it step by step to see if we would, you know, get on, if we both liked the idea, if we both believed in it.
And how long was it from your initial email to John to announcing the product?
To announcing the product, when did we announce it? we must have announced it in January or something. So 3 months, maybe?
That's pretty impressive. Pretty quick turnaround. Pretty quick launch.
Yeah, I mean, there was already a working prototype that John was able to test out. And I think what convinced him back then was I had added a few lines from this Nydorf book for Black, and I think I showed him the theory up to like move 21 for a few lines like perfectly, and he was quite impressed with that and convinced that the method actually helps you remember these things.
Yeah, it does for sure. I mean, and I'm someone who, my chess development preceded even the computer age. So I go back to the MCO opening volumes. And, you know, I remember putting your hand over the book, trying to remember lines. And it's just so inefficient compared to the Chessable software, where it remembers specifically the things that you forgot and then, you know, periodically brings them back. So, I just want to thank you as a chess enthusiast for making this product. So,
yeah, thanks.
So it's seen consistent growth. What have been the biggest challenges in the course of growing this company over the intervening couple years?
Chessable. So I think, I underestimated the challenges that come with bringing books to life, which is, you know, what we're trying to do, like taking this great course by, say, Dvoretsky and putting it into Chessable, or the Woodpecker Method and bringing it to Chessable. Each print book is quite unique and has its nuances. And when you bring it in, sometimes, or most of the time, your existing feature set just doesn't cut it. So you have to keep developing the software, you have to keep adjusting, and there's always a surprise in store. And yeah, it just takes a lot longer than you think it will. It's a lot more work.
And when you make a deal with these authors, so I know you've collaborated with Christoph Sulicki, aka Chess Explained, a lot, and Alex Kolovich, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, is another frequent collaborator. And also, as you mentioned, you know, you've got well-known popular books that have been mentioned on this very podcast, from 100 Games You Must Know to some Susan Polgar books. So you've got a lot of well-known books, but once you decide it's going to be adapted, who does the work of adapting it?
So there are different stages. I mean, for some of these courses, we actually have to recreate the PGM because one doesn't exist. So when I say it's a lot of work, I mean it. But yeah, I think everybody in the team chips in. For some courses, there'll be one particular team member responsible for the majority of it. But I think all of us have done some at some point, and all of the team has had at least one course to their name, basically.
And how many employees would you say you have now? I mean, I know you have authors that are sort of on a freelance basis, but so how do you categorize your number of employees?
So we are four people full time and about 6 to 8 part time, and we're looking to make it 6 full time by January. So
that's great.
About that.
That's great that you're growing. And for listeners, David, like myself, is a father of a young child, and this is your full time work now, correct?
Yeah, 100%.
Full-time and then some, from what I've read.
Oh, yeah, I've been working since 6 in the morning today. So if I sound a bit slow or something, that's probably why.
Yeah, and it's 4:30 p.m. London time right now. And of course,
3:30,
sorry. And we've got the World Championship coming up, and you guys are doing an event for that. And, you also, part of the reason we wanted to do this interview now is you've got some announcements you wanted to make. So why don't you go ahead and inform our listeners about what's coming, what new things are coming for Chessable?
You mentioned it's the World Chess Championship is happening. So we're putting on an event on November 20th in the evening, and everybody is welcome to come. It's free of charge. There are a few chess streamers and YouTubers coming. John's going to be there. Christoph's going to be there. We've had a few big GM names say they're going to come, but I'm not going to mention any names just in case they change their mind, you know.
Right.
But it should be a really, really great evening, and we're looking forward to meeting some of these people, some of these masters, and some of the Chessable users. And even if you don't use Chessable and you just play chess, just come around and have some fun. It's happening at the Battersea Chess Club, and we're looking forward to that.
So I'll put a note to that in the show description for any listeners who are either living in London or planning on making the trip. I'm jealous of you if you are, both for the World Championship and for the party. So, what else do you have coming out? I saw today Leon Watson, your
one of your colleagues, yeah.
Yeah, one of your colleagues mentioned that you guys are collaborating with New in Chess for one of Christoph Sulicki's books, his E4 repertoire.
Yeah, so what actually happened is Christoph wrote Keep It Simple 1E4 for Chessable exclusively, but it had such a great reception that New in Chess started working with him directly to make it into a print book. And you know, we've been bringing chess books to life from print book to online for a while, but this is the first time that we've got something that appeared online on Chessable and has made it into a print book, which we think it's quite cool and makes us all quite happy and motivated to keep going.
Yeah, that's great. It's like it's a two-way street now.
Actually, as part of that, we're doing $1,000 prize giveaway. So it's completely free to enter if anybody wants to. There, hopefully, you can put a link below as well. You can win a lesson with Christoph. You can win a signed copy of his print book, that kind of stuff.
Sounds great. I'm already on the record of being a big fan of Christoph's YouTube videos for... So I think regular listeners will know that, but you should check him out if you haven't. And he also is releasing a book coming up, right?
Yeah, he has a world championship kind of themed course. It's actually a complete repertoire for black against 1e4, based on 1e4, e5. And it's all based around Fabiano Caruana's games. So he actually recommends things that Caruana would play himself, like the Petrov, which he has used to some success. And it's on the rise. People are finding a new interest in that opening. So that's coming out next Monday, so a week from today. So if anybody is interested in that, and Christoph's work is awesome, do check it out.
Okay, yeah. And the Petrov is definitely an opening that has stood the test of time. I remember Karpov playing it a lot in my youth. And then when I had Jan Gustafsson on the second time, I just, you know, Jan is world authority on openings, and I just happened to ask him about, like, why did the Petrov fall in popularity and rise again? And apparently it was black was having trouble with the line where white plays knight c3 and castles queenside.
Yeah.
But Fabi has found some antidotes against that, and Christoph does a great job distilling ideas. So anyone looking for a repertoire against d4, I'm sure it's going to be a great product. And again, yeah, I'll link to that as well. So you mentioned you've been working a long day, David. So I can't even imagine. I mean, I've read some of your sort of life hacker posts and stuff about your general life as a startup finder. But what's your day to day life like in your work for Chessable?
You know, I try to make a few solid hours where I can concentrate on work, and that's easier to do in the mornings. I feel like I have more energy, and like I'm on top of things. But then other than that, it's try to find, you know, an hour or two or half an hour to work any time of the day, really, because as you mentioned before, I've got a kid, so I do have to give her some attention too. So yeah, it's just really a big balancing act. But if anybody is trying to do something like this, my recommendation would be that you do have like one main chunk where you know you're most productive, and make sure you don't miss that, because that's when the magic happens.
Yeah, yeah. Interruptions, they talk about switching costs cognitively.
Where, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh. Every time you pick up your phone or something, like it.
I don't pick up my phone, and I mean, I have to apologize if anybody tries calling me, but I try and schedule my calls, like, so that you don't get interrupted, you know, with something new. I mean, unless it's a real big emergency, I just try to leave it. And if somebody rings me 3 times, then I know, okay, something important must be happening, and then I'll pick up. But otherwise, as you say, minimize interruptions and try and concentrate.
Yeah, and how much of your work is spent coding versus the sort of CEO type big picture vision stuff that you also have to work on?
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice if the CEO stuff was big picture and vision stuff. actually, who was it? I think it was Elon Musk who said something like all the bad jobs fall on the CEO as the company's growing. And that's because, you know, your team members are already full on with the responsibility. So anything that falls outside their scope that, you know, might be a bit boring, might be a bit annoying and needs doing, you do it. So actually it's a lot of, like, again, juggling and just getting things done. And the more the company grows, the less time I have for actually developing myself. So I'm not really doing much programming lately, unfortunately. I mean, as much as I want to, but the benefit of that is that we are training a few more team members to learn the whole Chessable code base, and eventually they'll get more and more features done and code, hopefully as well as I can, who wrote the initial code base, you know.
And do you miss coding?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the grass is always greener on the other side, right?
Right, yeah.
yeah, of course, I miss coding, and I do plan to try and make bigger chunks for that in 2019. So that's part of the reason I'm hoping to be able to expand the full-time team size. We can do that successfully. Hopefully I get a few days in a row just coding and get some cool stuff done, because we definitely have a huge backlog of ideas and improvements that everybody could enjoy.
Are you at liberty to discuss any of those?
So in terms of any new features, I wouldn't want to mention any of them, and mainly because I don't want to, like, make any false promises, you know. There are a few things that we already discussed with the community that we really want to make, and it's just about trying to prioritize everything and make the time to be able to go and code them. So for instance, we released the Woodpecker method, and that course in particular could benefit from a custom space repetition schedule, so that people can study it either like the author suggests, and they have an idea about how often you need to review those problems, or how we suggest. And we'd love to make that feature. I mean, I would love to. I have an idea on how to do it. But, you know, I've just discussed with you, I think I've got like 1 hour of programming time last week. This week's probably going to be not much better than that. And you probably need like a good chunk of time, like 5 to 10 days of developing time to get that done. So, yeah, I wouldn't want to jump into feature sets just because we really need to get back on track with like developing time, especially for myself. Although, as I said before, we are trying to increase our full-time headcount. So if we can do that successfully, maybe one of the other developers can take those things on, and then we will be able to discuss features with more liberty. But yeah, if anybody is interested, I mean, we have a feature suggestion discussion forum on the site, and most of the time, the things are upvoted by the community and I get to the top, they get made. So, you know, it's not really a secret per se.
Right. And one that I feel compelled to ask you about, I think you mentioned it in one of the interviews I read, but I'm sure it's near the top of the list, is apps, Chessable apps. So what's happening with those, if anything?
Yeah, so that's a common question we get. And yeah, first of all, I want to say that Chessable does work from a tablet or from an iPhone or Android device. You just have to open it in your web browser, and so, which is not ideal, we realize. And we do want to get something more like an app working. And it's probably one of the top priorities next year, 2019. And how long it will take, we don't know the details yet, because we're trying to figure out exactly how we're going to do it now. And depending on the way we go about it, it might either take longer or less. And once we have a better idea, we'll definitely announce it.
Okay. Yeah, good to know. And yeah, we would keep an eye out for that. I'm sure it's fine on a browser as it is, but people love their apps. So
just
thought I would ask.
And for sure.
Another project I wanted to ask about, and first of all mention, Geert Vandervelt, creator of the intro music for Perpetual Chess, and big Chessable aficionado and adult improver, and I'm sure he'll be on the show at some point. But he made a tactic series based on the Olympiad, where like any you could see different tactics that players of you know varied levels from the Olympiad played, and it's just basically a free way to practice your tactics from sort of game-tested ideas. And he subsequently mentioned on Twitter that he's going to be doing a couple other things for Chessable. Are you able to discuss what those are?
Yeah, so, I mean, one of them is live now, and it's a free tactics and strategy course based in the World Chess Championships. So it's called Carlsen Caruana Move by Move. And, he's put it out there for free. He's going to be working on it with Leon. He's going to be adding basically the latest developments from the championship match onto it, and it's completely free. So that's one of the things that he's working on. And there are a couple of other things he's working on, and basically they're around using his skill set as a great Chessable course creator. His course was awesome, and helping us out with a couple of courses that are kind of behind on the backlog. And he's responsible for getting those live now. And we're very grateful to Geert for his assistance in that. And I think one of the courses that he's potentially working on is actually being top of his own course wish list, so he's quite excited about that one.
Cool. Yeah, I look forward to finding out what it is, and I have a couple ideas of my own, so when we're not recording, I don't want to divulge them, but we can discuss that as well. And one thing I just want to say for any listeners who haven't checked out Chessable, so as David has alluded to, of course, there's lots of books for sale and stuff like that, but there's stuff for free as well, such as Geert's tactics thing, which it's just amazing that he put in that as much time as he did and donated, and didn't charge for the product. And of course, also you can upload your own repertoires and just practice through that up to a limited amount. So of course, those of you who are able to, I mean, this is a lean startup and it's a great product for the chess community. So I really encourage that you find a way to support them financially, whether it's through buying books or through their sort of subscription model. And that also dovetails into what I wanted to ask you about, was how you came up with your current business model in terms of sort of the freemium setup, where some things are free and some are charged for, and how you were able to figure out what to charge for, and how it's going, if you feel that it's a sustainable business model.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, one of the key things we wanted to do is have a business model like immediately, you know, to begin charging immediately, because you can only truly validate an idea once people are willing to put their, you know, hard-earned money behind it. So we didn't want to have everything for free for that reason. But at the same time, we did want to have a lot for free, because that's how people can get to know your products with a very low barrier to entry. So, you know, I think given my background with social games, the majority of which follow a freemium model, I think it was kind of a logical choice for Chess to go about it this way. And you had another part to that question, which was about the price point. Price point wise, that one's tough. I mean, we started like quite cheap, and then people who bought products with us 2 years ago will know this. Things cost like $5, and again, I think that's part of the kind of like, you know, just getting people's trust so that they know that you're there, you're gonna stay there, and they know what you're about. They know that you're reputable, and you know, we have a 30-day money back guarantee, and we always stand by it, no questions asked. So, you know, we didn't want to create too big a barrier there, and it was cheap. But at the same time, as we keep growing, we have been increasing our price, and we've made no secret about it. And the reason is, you know, we need to hire developers, and we are competing with companies in various industries, like, I don't know, finance, like you got banks, and we're all vying for the same talent. So if we're going to encourage developers to join Chessable and work on chess, we need to be able to afford their salaries and lure them to work with us. So we've increased the price to the point that we think it's both still a good buy for the customer. It's a good price for our partners who all get a revenue share, and there is enough left over for us to try and cover our costs and so on.
Yeah, so when you speak of the price, you're talking mainly about the price of the books themselves?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, because there's also a subscription model where, in terms of uploading your repertoire, there's a certain amount you can store and use on the Chessable server for free, and then there's a monthly subscription, and then you guys also have a lifetime subscription option.
Yeah, so that's the Pro membership, and it has quite a few useful features. Like one of the top ones is like the ability to see difficult moves and drill down into them, like with much more precision than the standards algorithm. Yeah, people find that useful, as well as creating their own courses based on their games or their opening repertoires. And yeah, the price point of that is about $60 a year and $90 for 2 years. Something like that. And then there's the lifetime option, which is $250, I believe, or $290, around that. And actually, we try to price ourselves, like, you know, relative to what everybody else is charging again, because, I mean, that one was a bit more difficult to price, really, than the courses themselves. Personally, I think the lifetime option is a steal right now. So I've been having second thoughts about that one lately. Right. But, I'm really not sure how you go about that price point. I mean, you could, I think it's too cheap right now, basically.
Yeah, it probably is. So hopefully some listeners will jump on that before you change it.
Well, there are no immediate plans to change it. I mean, it's just my own feeling, but we don't really want to mess with that one for now. We have our hands full with all these other things, so it will stay at that for
and as a growing company, I mean, if a listener were concerned that, hey, I what if I buy a lifetime membership and then they go belly up, are there any concerns in that regard or no?
There are definitely no concerns of going belly up. I mean, the way Chessable is built, like let's say things like just like came to the worst, right? You could still leave it running with everything it has, which is, you know, somebody part-time overseeing it. What would happen is all the new features would stop coming aboard, and new content will probably stop getting released, but the actual servers, they'll stay running. I mean, and people will be able to access the content indefinitely, you know, and it's not expensive to run a server these days as the actual cost of having developers look after it. So yeah, I think we're here to stay for a long, long time. And I mean, right now we're growing. We have investors behind us. So yeah, I still think it's a steal, and the lifetime membership especially.
Okay, and I'm going to ask you a sort of related question. You've touched on it already, but I want to get to our listener question. And it means I get to get another crack at pronouncing this listener's name correctly. So always a fun challenge for me. So this question is from a friend of the podcast, Ashish Mukherjee. How did I do, Ashish? I hope I got it right. Mukherjee. He always spells it phonetically because I always butcher it. So apologies and fingers crossed. Now on to the question. Ashish says, David, I'm a recent convert to Chessable and I'm a huge fan. It's the app I've wanted since 1986 when my rating hit 2000 and promptly stagnated. Considering how great it is, I'm surprised at the low number of users judging by the discussion forums. I really want Chessable to succeed and thrive. As a tech marketing guy, I've seen too many smart engineers ignore sales and marketing until too late. Are you doing enough on the marketing front and with the business model?
Great question. Thanks, Ashish. And I would say that there's definitely two sides to that coin as well. I mean, you could be doing too much marketing too soon, right? So right. It's about finding that sweet spot, the balance. And we're definitely not ignoring marketing. We're just trying to pace it. As the founder, I'm probably the most dissatisfied person with our current feature set because I can see all its faults. I know all the bits that could be better, and I just yearn for the time to like disappear for a week and get it all done and make it perfect. So you really want to polish it up as much as you can and make it as streamlined as possible for a wide set of users before you go full on with the marketing. And I mean, like looking at that question, you really can't judge how popular Chessable is by the discussion forums because it's actually not our kind of center point of the community. Like people go on Chessable and they stay on the homepage, they do the repetitions, they learn something new. Only a small percentage of people actually end up on the discussion forums. So we are growing, I think, at a quite healthy pace. And sometimes maybe even too fast, you know. So I think you had a question actually before that you mentioned about our weekly active users growth, and we're on to 10,000 weekly users
now. Oh, wow. Because I think I saw a post from you on Indie Hackers in 2017 where you were in the 3,000s, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so we tripled at least in the last year. So I think, you know, that's healthy enough growth. And I wouldn't want it to be much faster because otherwise I might not be getting any sleep.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, busy with your wife and kid as well. So I'm sure that you wish you could clone yourself. So, David, I also would be remiss if we didn't talk a little chess because your interest in Chessable was born from just catching the chess bug, as basically all of our listeners have done. So what do you, I know that for a while you had a chess improvement blog where you were playing in tournaments and competing on your own. Are you still able to do that at all, given the constraints of this startup?
So my weekly study time has definitely taken a sharp turn for the worst, and the more Chessable grows. And actually, if people go on my profile on Chessable, they'll be able to see by my activity graph that, you know, I've missed a few days here and there, and my little activity squares are not as blue as they used to be. And that's just because there's so much more work lately. But I mean, it's top of my priority list to be able to get more and more involved with that. I mean, twofold, like you said, I love chess. I got a chess bug, so I want to be doing more of that. And also, as a startup founder, I think people should be using their own product so that I get the best idea of what the current state is, what's wrong with it, what's good with it, and that kind of thing. So yeah, definitely need to be doing a bit more of that.
And did you take chess up? Had you played as a kid at all?
Yeah, so I played against one of my great uncles as a kid, but, you know, just, let's say, a few games a year. So he taught me the moves and, you know, had a few games. But then basically I picked chess up again, I'd say, when, 2011 or something, 2012, when one of my colleagues back then was playing and he challenged me to a few games. We played online, we played in person as well, and I think I must have been rated around 1,000 to 1,200 back then.
So that's impressive improvement. I mean, you downplay your chess ability, but to pick it up in your 20s and get to 1,800 fairly quickly is pretty good.
Well, you know, I've stagnated for the last year and a half or two, so.
Yeah, well, it happens, and you've got good excuses, as we've discussed. So, your buddy John Bartholomew was just on Twitter recently talking about.
I saw that.
About how hard it is for adults to improve. Anyone on Twitter probably saw it, but if not, yeah. You should check it out. I mean, I we talk a lot about improvement, and it can be done, but it's also important to have realistic expectations. Is basically the point that John was making.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really agree with that tweet. So.
Oh wow! Yeah, because I mean, since you mentioned that, we might as well get into it. I mean, you have a few older blog posts where you were like, "I'm going to be a grandmaster." You know, I'm
a grandmaster. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I sense some defensiveness in your tone. I mean, I think that in a parallel life, it might be doable. But exactly. I think what John was getting at was like. You know, you can't pretend that the other responsibilities of life don't exist, and because they do exist, that's what creates the challenge for adults to continue to improve.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah, but I mean, the only bit I don't agree about is realistic expectations. I mean, I'm a very positive, like maybe over the top, confidence guy, and I like to set unrealistic expectations because then, if you fall short, you're still doing quite well, you know. And I think that's the beauty of it. So, I mean, I would encourage people to keep setting those unrealistic expectations and keep going for it. Just you know, don't be too bummed out if you fall short because that's part of the plan. You fall short, but you still done a good job.
Yeah, and I mean, it seems like your business is going pretty well. So if it continues to grow, maybe you can be on cruise control a little bit more and put that time into your chess improvement.
Yeah, I mean, any company needs more downtime for any employee because during that time is sometimes when the magic happens. You know, your brain's free to just kind of like connect some ideas, come up with the next big thing. So everybody needs that rest time. Not just the founders or the executive stuff and. That's the goal, you know, just try and rearrange things a little bit and see if all of us can get a bit more of a breather. And then I'll definitely be funneling that time into my chess study and chess improvements.
Excellent. Yeah. And I guess how old is your daughter?
She's 2.5.
Oh, I have a 2.5-year-old as well. And yeah, it's a fun age. And so do you think you'll be introducing her to chess in a few years?
For sure, yeah. I've been teaching her the name of the pieces already. I think that's a good start, and she knows all of them. She knows the knight goes hop, hop, hop. So
oh, that's great. That's good. I didn't. She's ahead of mine. She would crush mine. okay. So, do you have any favorite books, David? I mean, I've because I read a lot of your interviews, and because I'm just interested in the topic, I saw some business recommendations, but of course also chess recommendations. Was there any book that rocked your world, whether chess or business?
Okay, so let's look at chess first. And I mean, back when I actually was buying more paper books, I think one of my favorite ones was Chess for Zebras. I think it was quite a nice read, and he had a few good ideas to discuss. I think that's Jonathan Rosen.
Chess for Zebras, I think is...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, go ahead. I get Chess for Zebras and Chess for Tigers mixed up. But yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so I found that quite an interesting read. And lately I've been trying to look at chess pattern recognition, improve your chess pattern recognition, which is on Chessable, and I find it quite interesting and useful. And there's also forcing chess moves, which I think is also quite good to help you improve your forcing move calculation skills.
Yeah, that one has been, it wasn't on my radar, and now it's one of those things where like something's in your consciousness and then you see it everywhere. like Christopher Chabri recommended it, and then I'm just seeing it listed everywhere and recommended everywhere, and I still haven't checked it out, but I am eager to.
Cool. I'll share with you a copy on Chessable and can take a look.
Excellent. And what about business books?
So business books, some of my favorites are The Lean Startup, and that one talks about how it is important to take it a step at a time. You know, don't put all your eggs in one basket like straight away. And it's a philosophy I really followed closely for Chessable, you know, by first making it a private tool just for myself, and then showing it to John, and then doing some work to it, some more polish, and releasing it in beta. And we were in beta for a while. And then after we got through that stage, we went through the next stage and the next stage and the next stage. And I think it's quite important to do it that way. You don't want to mortgage your house and put everything into it straight away. I mean, don't get me wrong, there might be some ideas that need that, but you know, that's quite a risky strategy, that.
Yeah.
In terms of other books, let's give a shout out to Founders at Work. And that's basically a book full of interviews of founders of different startups. And you can just kind of get a feel for the struggles and challenges that they've gone through and before finally, you know, either succeeding or failing. I'm not sure if any of those failed. But yeah, I think it's a great read and quite inspiring and motivating if anybody's trying to do something similar.
Cool.
And maybe a shout out for our psychology books, which is Mistakes Were Made by, but Not by Me. It's actually quite a fun read. And, you know, if I could actually have another career as a professor in a university, I would try and make that my textbook for Psychology 101. And it basically teaches you about human biases and, you know, that kind of thing. And I think that's very important that we're all aware of our shortcomings as humans, and highly recommend it.
Yeah, that stuff is fascinating. And you went to grad school recently?
Yeah, as part of when I was starting Chessable Up, I thought it'd be fun to, you know, have a baby and do a master's degree.
Yeah, so. why not? Yeah, what could go wrong?
Yeah, it was quite a tough year, but actually it was quite useful because I was able to organize quite a bit of my coursework around chess and psychology and chess and learning science. And, you know, that's the good thing about grad courses. You can really tailor it to your professional interests. And yeah, that makes it more fun and more useful. So, yeah, I did a master's in psychology of education a couple
cool.
years ago.
Oh, perfect fit. And dare I ask if you finished it?
Yeah, I finished it.
Awesome. That's pretty impressive, man. Congratulations.
Thanks. It was good fun. My dissertation was looking at expertise and you know, what it takes to become an expert at something, and I tried to apply it to chess, and unfortunately it just fell short of being published in a journal due to sample size, actually. So I'm hoping to rerun that experiment at some point in the near future, maybe with some Chessable users, and resubmit it for publication, because yeah, I think there are a few interesting things that I learned from that, and I'd like to share it with the, you know, the psychology community.
Yeah, well, I mean, researchers, you know, dating back 100 years up to Anders Ericsson and the current ones, they all find chess to be an interesting lab, so.
Yeah, it is. And, yeah, we're hoping to do more of that with Chessable as well. We're actually working with the University of Sydney now, and they're trying to get some help from us and the platform to run some experiments with chess. And, yeah, I really find this stuff fascinating, so.
Cool. And I think the last topic that I have on my list, at least, David, is in checking out your personal blog, I noticed that you linked to a site called Time Well Spent,
yeah.
Having to do with a responsible use of technology.
Yeah.
So how does that go in conflict with the Chessable mission, or is
absolutely
it?
Not. Okay. Absolutely not. This is part of the philosophy I'm living, you know, and I think technology should be used to do good and should help people use their time well, instead of, you know, taking advantage of human biases and taking advantage of human weaknesses. And you know, some people get addicted to some things. And that was one of the things I didn't like about, you know, my previous startup, that some people got really addicted to some of our games, and not necessarily in a good way, you know, sometimes. And yeah, we don't want any of that. And yeah, the philosophy is basically just making sure you build your technology responsibly, that you give people control and you give them the tools. So, for example, if somebody doesn't want to use Chessable, they can export their private courses and they can delete their accounts. They can, you know, easily disable any notification that we send. You know, it's just about trying to be transparent and do a good job with your community. So you can also take a look at our privacy policy and terms of use. It's written, you know, by lawyers, as it has to be. But on the right side, we got a summary that's tried to like simplify what it's saying in plain English so people can read it. You know, it's just that kind of thing, trying to build responsible technology that people can use to benefit their lives rather than like hindering their lives.
Yeah, it's a tricky issue for sure.
Yeah, you know, it's being in the press a lot with like some of the big companies that you know, have done some unethical things, to say the least, you know.
yeah, and it's so hard to avoid them, you know, like I mean, I'm thinking of Facebook in this case. I sometimes, not a fan of a lot of the things they've done, but it's hard to, you know, it's hard to grow a business without it, and it's hard to stay in touch with people. So it's hard to put the genie back in the bottle.
Exactly. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, it's just about like always taking a critical look at yourself and making sure that you don't stray too far from this principle, really, when you're building the business. And I think, you know, Facebook kind of might have forgotten about the people who use it for a while. I mean, they're trying to fix it now, I think, but, you know, might be too late. I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to say. And one last question. I saw in some of your earlier interviews, you mentioned that you sort of had a vision beyond chess for Chessable, like in terms of a educational startup with other uses. Is that still a part of the vision right now?
Well, right now we're 100% concentrated and committed on chess, but in the future, you know, why not? It could be that we expand into something else, but for the time being, it's just chess for sure.
So, David, is before I let you get back to your busy life, is there anything else that you would like to plug?
Thanks, Ben. Yeah, it'd be cool to give another shout out to authors and players out there who want to work with us, and we're trying to bring more top names to the platform. So we got GM, Super GM, Hari Krishna publishing a repertoire with us soon. But we want to keep expanding the offering to our fans and keep working with authors to help them release their courses. So if anybody out there knows anyone who might be interested, or if you're interested, please get in touch.
Cool. Yeah. And obviously, as David attested with their weekly user base having tripled in the past year, it's a growing endeavor, and I think it's sort of the way the wind is blowing in terms of chess books and the way that they'll be sold in the future. So whether you're an established or an aspiring author, I would recommend trying it out. Just out of curiosity, when an author writes a book for you guys, do they write it generally through the platform, or do they like write it in prose or a PGN and then adapt it for Chessable if it's a product such as Christoph's E4 products and Petrov products and stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's very flexible. You can start working on it the way you used to. So whatever your favorite chess program is, you can use that, and then just give us a PGN, and we import it onto the site, or you can import it yourself, or you can work on it inside Chessable. It's really very flexible, and we can provide different levels of supports depending on who needs what, and we try to give a hand to everybody.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, so anyone interested, your email address, David, is?
David@chessable.com.
Okay, easy enough. Excellent. Easy. Well, David, thanks again for coming on. This was a lot of fun, and I'm really excited to see what Chessable does in the coming years and to hopefully find some more time to take advantage of your cool product.
Great, Ben. Thanks a lot. And I hope your podcast keeps growing, because it's really, really good stuff. And I'll keep listening to it. And good luck with it.
Cool. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Cheers. Bye.
Thanks to everyone who helps make Perpetual Chess possible. That includes Geert Vandervelt for supplying the intro music, Matthew Passy, my esteemed producer, and everyone who's written a good review on Apple Podcasts or other podcast platforms, or told a friend about the show. Every little bit helps. But of course, I'm most indebted to those who donate to support the show. Without you guys, the show would not be possible. And I want to give special thanks to my Patreon and PayPal Perpetual partners. Here are your names. I'm slowly but surely correcting some mispronunciations, so let's see how I do this time. Adam Ralph of ChessEngland.com, Adam Vrancourge, Adrian Gutierrez, Alex Pejas, Ali Morchetti, Andres Quizdois, Brian Mullis, Carl LeBons. I am Carlos Perdomo of ChessAtlanta.com, Chad Hilton, Chad Oliver, Chris Flanagan, Chris Wainscott, Christopher Chabrie, Christopher Wood. I am Christoph Zielicki, a.k.a. Chess Explain, Coach J's Chess Academy, Dan O'Hanlon, Daniel Ginsberg, Daniel Lucas, Daniel Naylor, Daniel D. Schaefer, Daniel Vine-E, Dwayne Edmonds, Ethan Smith, Donnie Ariel, Frank Tortoris, Gary Andrews, Gary Lewis, Greg Shahadi, Harish Srinivasan, GM Jakob Agard, James Bonastia, Jason Woolham, Jennifer Valens of OffTheRook.com, Jeffrey Martello, John Fernandez, John Hartman, John Jernigan, Jen Shahadi, Jens Green, Jerry Wells, John Thompson, Johnny McMenamin, Katerina Nemsova, Kelly Palmer, Kostya Kovutsky, Krishna Gopala Krishnan, Laura Belyavsky, Leo Delgado, Lorraine Dore, Matthew Passy, Macaulay Peterson of the Full English Breakfast, Matthew Tedesco, Nate Salon, Nathan Webster, Pascal Charbonneau, Paul Swaney, Paulo Santana, Peter Lux, Peter Merrifield, Randy Temple, Ricky Grijalva, Rob Lazorchek, Robert Steiner, Ryan Stone, Steiner Lima, Stuart Katz, WGM Tatyav Abrahamian, Thomas Stanix, Thomas Tachenko, Tim Brennan, Tim Seymour, Timothy Ha, Todd Bryant, Tony Rotella, Tyron Price, Victor Vrankuj, Zhao Cheng, and Zhivko Stoyanov. Thanks a lot, everyone. Catch you guys soon.
Sports Social Podcast Network.